Today we're reading from Canto number 10, chapter number 1, and we're reading from text numbers 33 to 34. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So first we'll read from text number 33, and then we'll go on to text number 34, which has a purport by Srila Prabhupada. So text number 33. Sankaturya mridangascha nedur dundun bhaya samam prayana prakrametata Varavadvo Sumangalam. Translation. O beloved son, Maharaj Parikshit, when the bride and bridegroom were ready to start, conch shells, bugles, drums, and kettle drums all vibrated in concert for their auspicious departure. And now we'll read from text number 34. Pati pragrahinam kamsam abhasyaha sariravak asyastvam ashtamo garbo hantayam vahase buddha. Translation. While Kamsa, controlling the reins of the horses, was driving the chariot along the way, an unembodied voice addressed him. You foolish rascal, the eighth child of the woman you are carrying will kill you. Purport. The omen spoke of Ashtamo Garbaha, referring to the eighth pregnancy, but did not clearly say whether the child was to be a son or a daughter. Even if Kamsa were to see that the eighth child of Devaki was a daughter, he should have no doubt that the eighth child was to kill him. According to the Vishvakosha dictionary, the word garbha means embryo and also arbhaka or child. Kamsa was affectionate toward his sister and therefore he had become the chariot driver to carry her and his brother-in-law to their home. The demigods, however, did not want Kamsa to be affectionate toward Devaki, and therefore, from an unseen position, they encouraged Kamsa to offend her. Moreover, the six sons of Marichi had been cursed to take birth from the womb of Devaki, and upon being killed by Kamsa, they would be delivered. When Devaki understood that Kamsa would be killed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who would appear from her womb, she felt great joy. The word vahase is also significant because it indicates that the ominous vibration condemned Kamsa for acting just like a beast of burden by carrying his enemy's mother. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalan Shri Gurun Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Varijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिय वंशाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौरा भक्तवृंदा हरे कृष्णा कृष्ण कृष्णा हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। So we begin the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the smiling face of Krishna. And in order to see the smiling face of Krishna, first Krishna has to appear in this world. And so the first five chapters of the 10th canto are talking about all the events which preceded Krishna appearing in this world. It's very interesting because the Srimad Bhagavatam can be understood on many different levels. The Srimad Bhagavatam on one level can be understood literally. It's an actual story, events which happened in the course of time. But the Srimad Bhagavatam can also be understood on the ethical level, that along with these literal events, there are many lessons, ethical insights that we can draw in order to live more happy and fulfilled lives ourselves. But not just that, the Srimad Bhagavatam can also be understood metaphorically, that what's going on in the events of Srimad Bhagavatam are ultimately the events which go on in our life. And so when we look at this first part of the 10th canto, then what we're seeing is that many, many things are being described in terms of the events precipitating Krishna appearing in this world. And metaphorically, we can also see that those things have to happen in our own life in order for Krishna to fully manifest his smiling face in our lives. We see in the beginning, there is desperation. The desperation of who? Mother Bhumi. Mother Bhumi is overburdened by impious rulers, by leaders who have become decadent in the way they conduct themselves. And therefore, in great desperation, Mother Bhumi goes and prays to, along with the demigods, to Lord Vishnu, that he should descend to rectify the situation. So metaphorically, we can say, until there is desperation in our life, until there is a real acute sense of crying for Krishna, that Krishna will never really appear. When Krishna decides to descend in this world, then he has to make a choice as to who he'll take birth from. So it's explained that Prishni and Sutapa were two individuals who performed incredible austerities. It's said that they performed 12,000 years of austerity. And by that austerity, they qualified themselves to become Vasudeva and Devaki so that Krishna would take birth as their son. And so we see here another element that needs to be there. Not just desperation, but there needs to be dedication, complete dedication in worshipping Krishna, dedication in one's sadhana, in one's application to the process of sadhana bhakti. Not just that. Here in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining that before Krishna could appear, the Sadgarbha had to be killed. And Srila Prabhupada is in his own purports gives that metaphorical understanding that the Sadgarbhas represent the six enemies: lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, madness, illusion. Kamsa represents fear, and the womb represents one's bhakti. So only when one becomes fearful of material life, and that fear of material life kills lust, anger, greed, envy, pride, illusion, then only will the bhakti that we perform to Krishna become pure, and it is that pure bhakti which will give rise to Krishna. And so the third thing that has to happen before Krishna can appear is purification. Without purification, Krishna will not appear in our life. And later on, we find that when Krishna enters the womb, then everyone is thinking of Krishna. Vasudev, Devaki, their minds are drawn to Krishna. Even Kamsa, he's constantly thinking of Krishna. And that's another thing which precipitates Krishna's arrival in this world, meditation. That when one becomes purified, then the mind is naturally drawn towards Krishna. So these are all beautiful lessons, that before Krishna can appear in this world, there has to be desperation, there has to be dedication, there has to be purification, and there has to be intense meditation. And when all of these things are there, then there will be a revelation of Krishna, who appears in his four-armed form, but then on the plea of his parents, transforms into the beautiful two-armed form that we all so dearly love. So this is very, very beautiful. And in this way, we're reading in this beautiful verse how the Sadgarbha, Prabhupada is mentioning in the purport, had to be killed before Krishna could appear. Today, in the time that we have, I want to focus on a little bit of a different part of the purport. Prabhupada uses beautiful terms in his purports. And when I read this, it just kind of stood out to me. And therefore, I thought it would be nice to focus on this. In the final line of the purport, Prabhupada says, the word vahase is also significant because it indicates that the ominous vibration condemned Kamsa for acting just like a beast of burden by carrying his enemy's mother. So when I read this sentence, this just stood out to me, that Srila Prabhupada calls Kamsa a beast of burden. And whenever we hear about Kamsa, I always remember one time I was out distributing books and I met someone who had taken a Krishna book. He actually remembered me and he said, I took a Krishna book, both parts, from you like 4 years ago. I said, wow. And he said, I read the whole thing. He didn't manage to come to any temples or meet any devotees, but he read all 90 chapters of the Krishna book. And I said, wow, that's amazing. And I asked him, like, what did you learn from it? Like, can you just tell me, like, something that really stood out to you? And he said, he just said this. It was very interesting. He came out with this. He said, what I learned from it was when I was reading about this evil king, Kamsa, then I realized, you know what? Maybe I have a little bit of a Kamsa within me. Maybe there's a little bit of an inner Kamsa there. And he had this realization that there was a Kamsa within him, maybe a Kamsa within each one of us. And so when Prabhupada here calls Kamsa a beast of burden, I was thinking, maybe I'm also a little bit of a beast of burden. It's a very beautiful way to describe Kamsa. Prabhupada says he's a beast of burden because Kamsa is carrying Devaki. And what he doesn't realize is that the personality who he's carrying is going to give birth to the personality that is ultimately going to kill him. And therefore, he's a beast of burden. And that's very amazing because perhaps in our life, we are also carrying many, many things that are ultimately, if we don't let go of them, are going to lead to our downfall, our destruction, our distress, and are going to be injurious to our life. And the amazing thing is, some of the most dangerous things that harm us in our life are things that we willingly hold on to. Just as Kamsa is carrying Devaki on his chariot willingly, and the Akashvani is saying, you're a fool, because this lady who you're carrying, she's going to cause you to die. And so I was thinking that, yes, we are that Kamsa. We're holding on to so many things that we have to let go of. Because if we don't let go of some of these things, then they're going to destroy us. We have a certain, we're beasts of burdens in terms of the lifestyle that we create for ourselves. Our lifestyle can become a burden that we adopt. And then later on, it causes us to break down. Sometimes I meet people who create such a complicated lifestyle, a big house, extravagant habits, a certain way of functioning in this world, which requires them to have such a complicated life. And when they create this kind of lifestyle, they have to work so hard to maintain this lifestyle. And that whole lifestyle becomes like a burden which drives them into the ground. Our lifestyle that we create can cause us to become a beast of burden. Not just that, sometimes our desires can cause us to become beasts of burden. We harbor all of these desires. We hold all of these desires within our consciousness. For example, the desire to achieve something. And that desire to achieve something causes us then to again function in the world in such a way that we drive ourselves to an unhealthy way of living that ultimately causes us to break down. Heavy lifestyles, heavy desires, sometimes our own character can become like a burden. We hold on to all of these qualities, these kind of negative character traits. And these negative character traits also cause us so much problems in our life and harm our relationships, harm our sense of well-being. But we hold on to those character traits. So broadly speaking, the Shastra says that every conditioned soul is holding two main types of burden. In Sanskrit, we can say the two main types of burden that each one of us hold. Number one, anarthas. And number two, upadhis. Anyone who has any anartha, anyone who has any upadhi, is a beast of burden. Anartha means unwanted, unhelpful, undesirable qualities that are within our character. And upadhi means the designations, the labels, the various superficial identities that we adopt in this world. These are the two things which cause us a big burden in our life and can cause you to break down. Luckily for us, Bhakti yoga is the means by which we can let go of these heavy burdens of anarthas and upadhis. In the seventh chapter of the first canto, it's explained about Vyasadeva. Anartho pashamam shakshad bhakti yoga adhoksaje lokasya janato vidvams chakre satvata samhitam. It's mentioned in this seventh chapter of the first canto, anartho pashamam shakshad, the anarthas that we have are superfluous. They're not part of us. They're something artificial, these unhelpful, undesirable qualities. Bhakti yoga madog sajay. And by practicing bhakti yoga, one can eliminate, one can be free from all of these anarthas. Lokasya ajanato vidvams, but the whole world doesn't know this. Chakre Satpatha Samhitam, and therefore Vyasadeva wrote all the literatures to explain to people the process by which they can get rid of their anarthas. We're also holding upadis. Therefore, what does Rupa Goswami say? Sarvopadi vinirmuktam tatparatvena nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktiruchyate. That sarvopadi, all of the upadis, all of the designations, vinirmuktam, can be mitigated, can be taken away. Rishikena Rishikesha, by engaging one's senses in the service of the master of the senses. Sevanam Bhakti Rucha, this is known as devotional service. So by devotional service, one can get rid of anarthas and upadis and save oneself from the life of being a beast of burden. And so much of spiritual life is about learning to let go. There's one famous French author, and he says, spiritual realization is not the point when there's nothing new to learn, but it's the point where there's nothing left to take away. Spiritual perfection is not the point where there's nothing new to learn because you've learned everything. He says spiritual perfection is the point where there's now nothing artificial left to take away. In other words, he talks about destructive enlightenment. Destructive enlightenment means enlightenment is not about getting more, achieving more, knowing more. It's not about going somewhere, but enlightenment is about getting rid of everything artificial, getting rid of everything superficial, letting go of all these burdens that are there that weigh us down. And so this is so much of a part of spiritual life, how to learn to let go of unhelpful lifestyles, how to let go of unhelpful habits, how to let go of unhelpful desires, how to let go of unhelpful character traits. So much of life is just about letting go. And now let me share with you how this is so much ingrained within our scriptures. If we look at our corpus of scriptures, we can say perhaps the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavad Purana are the foremost. And if you look at the Bhagavad Gita and the Bhagavad Purana, they go through a very similar trajectory in their presentation of Krishna consciousness. If you look at the beginning of the Gita and the beginning of the Bhagavad Purana, it's very similar. The first chapter of the Gita, Krishna doesn't even speak. The conversation doesn't even begin. It's just a preface. Arjuna's letting it all out. Similarly, in the Bhagavad Purana, in the first canto, the conversation between Sukha and Parikshit doesn't even begin. It's just a preface. It's just it's setting the scene. It's kind of giving you like a lead up to the conversation. Similar how they start. Not just that, if you look at the second chapter of the Gita, Srila Prabhupada entitled it Contents of the Gita Summarized, because if you closely look at that chapter, Krishna basically explains everything Arjuna needs to know in one chapter, just finished from beginning to end, how the spiritual journey takes place. Krishna answers everything. And if you look at the Bhagavad Purana, in the second canto, the first three chapters, Parikshit asks his question, what is the duty of someone about to die? And you know what? In three chapters, Sukadev gives all the answers. He actually answers everything. And you know what? At the end of three chapters, Sukadev says, I've answered all your questions. And at the end of those three chapters, did you know, Jiva Goswami says, the Shruti Phala of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam is given at the end of those three chapters. Because practically Sukadeva has already explained everything. Normally the Shruti Phal, or the fruit of listening, is given right at the end of the conversation. But Sukadeva Goswami already gives it in the second canto because he's answered everything already. So just like Krishna summarizes everything, Sukadeva Goswami summarizes everything. But then Arjuna says, no, 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 speak more. So then Krishna begins to expand on the topics. Similarly in Bhagavatam, Parikshit says, okay, you've answered the questions, but how is the universe created? He comes up with a question. And then Sukadeva begins to explain more. Let's go back to the Gita. Right in the middle of the conversation of the Gita is the essence of the Gita, isn't it? The ninth chapter, Manmana Bhavamad Bhakto, illuminating bhakti. Now, if you look at the Bhagavad Purana, when we reach the 10th canto, this is the point, actually, when you count the Bhagavatam verses, the point when we reach the 10th canto is 3.5 days into the 7-day conversation, right in the middle. Right in the middle of the Bhagavad Purana, you find the 10th canto. And what does that 10th canto do? It reveals the beautiful nature of Krishna, the essence of the Bhagavatam. Can you begin to see the similarity between the Gita and the Bhagavatam? They both begin with a preface. They then go on to explain everything in a very succinct format. There is then an extra elaboration of the teachings. And then right in the middle of both literatures, do you find the essence? But in both literatures, once the essence has been given, the conversation doesn't stop. It continues on. After Krishna has established bhakti in the middle 6 chapters of the Gita, Krishna speaks another 6 chapters of Jnana Yoga, because that Jnana Yoga is meant to help you to let go. That Jnana Yoga is meant to help you become detached. That Jnana Yoga is meant to help you live in this world, but live with a completely different vision. And in the same way, in the Bhagavatam, once the 10th canto has been given, Sukadeva doesn't finish the conversation. He continues on with the 11th and the 12th cantos. And if you look at the 11th canto, it's basically Uddhava Gita. And what is Uddhava Gita? It's lessons in detachment, lessons in letting go, lessons in how to relinquish one's entangling aspects in this life. So the Gita and the Bhagavatam have a similar trajectory, and that trajectory ends with teachings on how to let go. Because if we don't learn to let go, we become beasts of burden. We may know everything about Krishna consciousness. We may practice everything in Krishna consciousness. We may, do so many things in Krishna consciousness. But if we're holding on, there's that famous story of a sage, and he was asked, what is the nature of illusion? And he jumped off the Vyasasan. He ran into the courtyard. He caught hold of a tree. Tree hugging, and he held the tree and he started shouting, let me go, let me go, let me go. He said, that's the nature of illusion, that we're holding on. And therefore, how will we ever be able to reach? And so these are some thoughts that came to my mind as I was reading this beautiful purport of Prabhupada, that yes, somehow or other, we have to make sure we don't become beasts of burden. And beasts of burden means to let go of your anartas and your upadis, and to make use of the knowledge that Krishna gives in the Gita and the Bhagavat in terms of how to actually engender devotional detachment. Not dry detachment, not a detachment which comes from frustration, not a detachment that sour grapes, but a detachment that naturally comes because you have something much better that we're aiming for. That is a devotional detachment. And that detachment is for everyone. Therefore, Kaviraj Goswami says, Mahaprabhur Bhakta Ganer Vairagya Pradhan Jahade Ki Pritahana Gaura Bhagavan. Mahaprabhur Bhakta Ganer. Mahaprabhu's devotees, they all have one quality, Vairagya Pradhan. They have engendered renunciation, detachment. Jahadeki, and when Mahaprabhu sees that detachment, Pritahana Gaura Bhagavan, that golden Lord becomes very happy because now he realizes, yes, this person can fully benefit themselves from this beautiful gift of prema. So these are some thoughts I wanted to share with you, and I invite any comments, questions. And Andrea, is it Andrea? Am I saying the name right?
You're saying Andrea. Yeah, you said it perfectly. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Uttapa Prabhu. I actually had a question. Could you give some examples of anarthas and upadis just so that I could further understand those terms? And then my second question is, how do we practice detachment without becoming cold-hearted? Hare Krishna.
Thank you so much. Two very thoughtful questions. Some examples of anarthas and upadis. So anarthas can refer to bad character traits. For example, when Krishna kills many of the demons in Vrindavan, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that each one of these demons represents an anartha in the heart. So, you know, Trinavarta, for example, represents pride, thinks he's flying high in the sky, much above everyone else, looking down on everyone else. Pride is an anartha. You know, Putana represents deception, deceiving others, because she comes in a mood of spirit, of service, so-called service, but inside harboring something else. Shakatasura, the heart demon, represents bad habits, a history of a heavy load of bad habits that we're dealing with. You know, like they say, habits are like soft, cozy beds. They're very easy to get into, but very difficult to get out of. So we're kind of like burdened by these habits. So these are anarthas which are given. And upadis are labels that we carry around with us. Labels, you know, I am of a certain nationality. I am of a certain caste or creed. It's amazing, even in Krishna consciousness, we can carry many upadis. You know, I hold a certain position. I'm somewhere in the pecking order. I like Vrindavan very much because I feel like Vrindavan is a place where no one really cares like what your title is. It's just like everyone comes to Vrindavan as a beggar. And it's like, it doesn't matter if you're a sannyasi, a leader, a pot washer. When you enter the borders of Vrindavan, you just become a beggar. Because all those upadis just go into insignificance and we're just here praying for some mercy. So upadis are like that, you know, visions of identity that we carry with us that, you know, are not who we really are. So those are some examples. And then you ask, like, how do we become detached without being cold? And so Rupa Goswami gave the best way to do it by talking about Yukta Vairagya. He said, Yukta Vairagya. Yeah, this is the concept, the contribution of Rupa Goswami, who said, become detached, not by necessarily giving things up, but by using all of those things in the service of Krishna, in the service of others. And thereby you give up the essential thing, which is the attachment in the heart for that thing. But you don't necessarily need to give up things externally. So when we give up things in by giving up the selfish mentality of using those things and rather use all of those things that we have for a better purpose, then we become detached without becoming hard-hearted. They say some people, anyway, I think. Thank you so much. Emily, would you like to share something?
Yes, Hare Krishna, thank you so, so much for coming and giving this wonderful class to us today. My question is something that was kind of at the beginning of the class regarding Devaki and Vasudev. So it's kind of a philosophical curiosity. What is the, because you mentioned that they in their past lives had done austerities to take that role and service to be the parents of Krishna. What is the difference from them and Yashoda Nanda, for example?
Yeah, it is a very beautiful question. So yeah, as I mentioned, Devaki and Vasudev in their previous life were Prishni and Sutapa. Tapa means austerity, and Sutapa means one who performs great austerity. That's definitely not me there from Sutapa Das, although on my Zoom I put Sutapa. I need to remember to put the Das. So the idea is that as Sutapa, he did 12,000 years of austerity so that Krishna would become their son. There are many things to say on this, but the essence of it is this. Devaki and Vasudev wanted God to become their son. Oh, thank you. Someone's changed it. Devaki and Vasudev wanted God to become their son. But Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj wanted Krishna to become their son. And therefore, there's a slight difference between Yashoda and Krishna. You know, some people love Krishna because he's God. And some people love God because he's Krishna. And so it's said that in Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj's love for Krishna, there is a certain intimacy, a certain purity, a certain complete engrossment in the character and qualities of Krishna that makes them the original parents of Krishna. And later on in the commentaries, we hear actually that Krishna became the son of both of them. But it was Vasudev Krishna, the majestic aspect of Krishna that took birth in Kamsa's jail. And it was Yashoda Nandan Krishna who took birth in Braj, in Gokul. And when Vasudev brought Vasudev Krishna to Gokul, then both of those Krishnas merged into one. There are many things to be said on this, but that's the essential difference. I hope that helps. Thank you so much. I don't know if anyone else would like to make any comments.
Good morning.
Francesca Prabhuji, Hare Krishna.
Well, this is my daughter's phone, so you can call me Francesca if you like.
Francesca, okay.
But this is William. This is William from New York.
Oh, William. Hare Krishna.
Hare Bol. I'm straying from the subject a little bit here. Your accent, you're from England. Are you serving in England right now? Because I hear an English accent.
Yeah, I for better or worse, I was born in the UK.
Sweet.
My parents are from India.
Nice.
And, I'm based at the Manor. And Bhaktivedanta Manor in London, but often traveling around the UK. So yes, guilty as charged. I am. That is a British accent.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's my.
It gives a lot of taste. Oh, in the really? Class. Wonderful class. It gave some extra. You know,
a bit of rasa there.
Ice to the class.
Okay, thank you, William. That's very kind.
Haribol.
Of you. Hare Purush Prabhu, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, how is it? Thank you very much. Can you hear me?
That sounds like the Akashvani from the skies, you know?
Can you hear me?
Turn off your volume, Hare Purush Prabhu. Turn off the audio on your computer.
It's all the way down. Oh, she's turning.
Akashvani, please.
She's turning down.
Welcome to the Matrix.
Can you hear me now?
Okay, there you go.
Hello?
Yeah, we can. That's good now. That's good.
No, you can hear me, but I can't hear you. Now you're muted. Oh, wait a minute. I got it. I figured it out. Okay, yeah. Now you can hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. So interesting, Prabhu used the term yesterday, backstory, how the Srimad Bhagavatam is perfectly setting the stage for the drama of Krishna's appearance. And just like there's the Ayurveda about healing the body and about the Shilpa Shastra, which is about architecture, there's a Veda about drama. And it indicates the principles of how a genuine, perfect drama is created. And the first thing is, there has to be a hero, a good guy, of course, you know, Krishna. And then there has to be a villain. So this back part of the backstory they're creating, how, you know, here's this daughter who is affectionately loved by her father, and she's, you know, on her wedding day. And then how cruel and evil and selfish, they're bringing out the bad character of this Kamsa. And then, you know, setting the stage for the other principle of the drama is that the there has to be like a twist, something that's out of control or off balance, like the earth being overburdened. And then during the course of the drama, things are resolved. So that's kind of interesting that Krishna perfectly arranges the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Vyasadeva, so that we get drawn into this conflict. And one really good point you made about how our attachments are the cause of our distress. You know, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, you are the cause of your pleasure and pain. There's a tendency of people say, my parents were like this, my father was like that, and therefore I'm, or the temple president, the management did it. But actually, there's nothing coming to us that isn't coming from Krishna's loving hand. And ultimately, because of some choice that we've made, Tateno Kampang Shushimikshamangal, then, you know, this is due to my past misdeeds, and I deserve a lot worse. And those are really nice points that you made, that we can't blame our distress on anyone else.
Yeah, it's so such a powerful point to try to live our lives in such a way that we always avoid the victim mentality. You know, we really, that really disempowers us and also clouds us, you know, from actually doing the internal work to understand what Krishna is trying to teach me here. So yeah, thank you so much, Guru. Thank you.
And I like the tree hugger point. Don't be a tree hugger. Thought it was a positive. It was a positive new age thing that you can say, I hug trees, you know. And now you destroyed that for me, Prabhu. Tree hugger.
No, but the devotees go, right? When you go to Vrindavan, there's kalpa vriksha trees, right? And it said that you can hug them and then make a wish, you know. So I won't tell you who it was, but there was one devotee who went there as a young boy and his dad told him this. And he hugged the tree and he made his wish. And later on in the evening, his dad said, like, by the way, what did you ask for? And he said, I prayed that I become like the best mridanga player in the world. And I have to admit that he probably is one of the best mridanga players in the world. I won't say who it is, but it really works. Vrindavan is Chintamani Dham, so it fulfills all the desires that one may have.
Nice. Yeah, it's all real. It's all real.
Yeah.
Okay. We have to be careful with desire, though.
Right. Yeah, there's one Christian poet, he says, more tears were shed from prayers that were answered than prayers that were unanswered. Because we end up praying for all the wrong things and then they come true and then we're like, oh my God, you know.
The devotees tell that story about the atheist being chased by the grizzly bear. And he never prayed before, and the grizzly bear is coming closer, and then he trips and he falls, and he never prays. So I got to pray. Oh, Krishna, please make the grizzly bear a devotee. And then the grizzly bear says, "Sadidadavijado." That, you know, we want to pray for pure devotional service. Otherwise, what's the use?
Thank you so much. Thank you for your association, everyone, and for allowing me to share something with you. It's really an honor to be with you all. Glories to Prabhupada.
Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sutapa Das Prabhu ki jai.